This presentation is brought to you by iawaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Shaul HaMelech is told in today's Haftarah by Shmuel the prophet, Pokadati es asher oso Amalek liYisrael. I have noted what Amalek did to Yisrael, asher somloi baderech ba'aloisoi v'mitzrayim, how he attacked him on the way back from Mitzrayim. Ato now lech v'hikiso es Amalek, go and smite Amalek, v'hacharamtem es kol asher loi, and destroy everything that he has. V'loisach mil olov, and you shall show him no mercy. V'heimato me'ish ad isho, you shall kill man and woman, me'oilil v'ad yonek, little children, sucklings, mishor v'ad seh, oxen and sheep, migomo v'ad chamor, camels and from camels to donkeys, everything. And Shaul listened, got the people together, and got the army mobilized, came to the area of Amalek, told the Keni to remove themselves from that area, v'yach Shaul es Amalek, and Shaul smote Amalek, v'yispois es Agag melech Amalek choy, and he captured Agag the king of Amalek alive, v'es kol ha'om hecherim lefi choriv, but he destroyed all the people by sword, v'yach mel Shaul ve'om al Agog, and the people had pity, Shaul and the people had pity on Agog, Ba'al Meitav Hatzoyin, on the good flock, Ba'abokel, and so on. V'loy Ovu Acharimam, and they did not want to destroy them. And then Hashem comes, Nichamti ki himlachti yeshoil lemelech. I regret having appointed Shaul as a king, ki shov me'acharai v'est dvorai lohekim, because he has turned away from me and not fulfilled my words, v'yichal ishmur v'yizakil Hashem kol harayim. The God instructs Shmuel, Israel is peaceful and quiet, there are no wars going on, and out of the blue Hashem instructs Shaul to attack the Amalekites and to destroy them utterly. Men, women, children, babies, animals, everything has to be wiped out and destroyed. Why? Because God remembers what Amalek did to the Jewish people on their way back from Mitzrayim. Shaul sets about it and does the job. But at the end they start losing heart. When it comes to killing Agag and some of the flock and the sheep, they felt that they couldn't bring themselves to kill him at that point. They had other plans for them. And Hashem gets angry. And it's for that act that Shaul loses the throne. The process, the internal soul searching that went on in Shaul isn't recorded in the Gemara. Isn't recorded in the Tanakh, but it is recorded in the Gemara. It wasn't such a simple thing that Shaul merely mobilized the army and went out to kill these people. It says the Gemara in Yuma Dav Chaf Beis Amud Beis, B'shol she'omar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Shaul, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Shaul, Lech v'hikiso es Amalek, go and smite Amalek, Omar, Shaul said to himself as follows, U'ma nefesh achas, Omro Teiro, Havei Eglu Arufo, if one person is killed in a city, the elders of that city are held responsible, and one has to bring an egg lo arufo, there's a special process, procedure, and a korban that has to be brought to atone for the terrible tragedy that one person died. Kol anefoshus halalu arachas kama v'kama. How can I be responsible for the destruction of so many people? The men, the women, the children, I've got to wipe out an entire nation. How can I bring myself to do that? Which is a strange question, because he's been instructed to do that by the Ribbono Shel Olam. When does one have to bring an egg arufo? For that's if a person dies, a person's life is taken and one is responsible, and that's it's something that happens. But here God has instructed him, that's what you have to do. So what's he questioning the Ribbono Shel Olam? An interesting question. And if you want to say, I've got to do it because Amalek sinned, what about the animals? What did the animals do to deserve this kind of fate? And if the adults have sinned, what have the little children done? So that Shaul goes through a soul searching which actually makes him incredibly uncomfortable with the deed he's about to perform. And he's analyzing it. Yotso Baskul Vomrul, a heavenly voice came out and said to him, Al Tahid Sadik Harbe, don't be too righteous. That's all it said. Al Tahid, quoted a posuk, Al Tahid Sadik Harbe, don't be too righteous, Shaul, just get on with the job. The question is interesting, the soul searching is interesting, and the answer is interesting. And the whole mitzvah is interesting. This mitzvah that we have to do, imagine if it were at a time where we had to do it. Today we don't have to perform this mitzvah. As we shall see, we do have to perform this mitzvah, but in a different way today. But imagine today was a time when we had to fulfill it literally. We read in the Torah this morning, when everything settled from your enemies round and about, Timche Ezecher Amalek, Mitachas HaShomayim, you shall wipe out the memory of Amalek. It's not just a matter of wiping out the people of Amalek. To wipe out the memory of Amalek, that's everything that belonged to them. Imagine we lived in such a time. Imagine the Beis HaMikdash was rebuilt and we were living in Eretz Yisrael and everything was settled. And now Mashiach came and we all say we want Mashiach now, and we sing and dance how we want Mashiach now, but we've got to realize what that means. And when we're settled and established and Mashiach has established his kingdom, one of the first things he'll say is right, it's time now to wipe out Amalek. And we'll say, who is Amalek? And imagine the Mashiach will say, Amalek is the German people. Or Amalek are the French people. Or Amalek are the British people. Who knows who Amalek is? Amalek is the South African people. Who knows who they are? So would everybody please take swords and machine guns and go to Germany or to England or to South Africa or wherever and kill every man, woman, child, baby, animal, the lot. That's the mitzvah. Would we really be able to do it? But that's one of the things we're going to have to do when Mashiach comes. So all are getting excited about Mashiach coming and all that. We've got to realize the responsibilities too. How are we going to perform that mitzvah? And that's exactly what Shaul was told to do. Go in to this innocent nation, so to say. And they're not fighting at the moment. There's no immediate threat from Amalek. But because of what they did when Am Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim, it's time to wipe them out. Go and wipe them out. And Shaul goes through this. Shaul has a difficulty with that tzibur. And he questions, what have they sinned in? And how can I be responsible for such an enormous quantity of bloodshed? And the answer that Hashem gives him is not, get on with it, you stupid fool. What are you questioning my mitzvah for? Which is what we would have expected the answer to be. Who are you to question? I've given you a mitzvah, go and do it. That's not what the answer is. The Baskel comes along and says, Al Tid Sadik Harbe. You're going a bit beyond what's necessary. Sure, but not too much. That's enough. Nothing wrong with a question, but don't go too far with it. Get on with the job now. What he's criticized for is not killing Agag and some of the animals. That's what he loses his kingdom for. He doesn't lose his kingdom for questioning. He doesn't lose his kingdom for going through that whole soul searching. That's all acceptable. And then he goes ahead and he does do the job. That's all fine. He loses his kingdom for leaving Agag and the animals alive. And from Agag comes Haman eventually. And what is the Baskel say exactly? Al tahid sadik harbe. You're going too far in your self-analysis. You're going too far in your self-questioning. Implying that essentially that self-questioning is okay. But there's just too much of it. Al tahid sadik harbe. Don't be so righteous. A little bit less. Don't question a little bit less. But the process of questioning is not what he's criticized for. The process of asking, how can I do it, on what basis I should do it, what have they done wrong, do they really deserve all this kind of bloodshed, nothing wrong with that, except Al Tahid Sadik Harbe, you're going a bit far, Shaul. And we have to analyze and understand why there needed to be that process of questioning and why it shouldn't go too far. There is an interesting Rabbeinu Yonah which discusses the obligations of an individual to go to Beis Din to give evidence against a person and so on. There's a din in Choshen Mishpat that one has to go to give evidence, but you only go to give evidence if your evidence has value. You don't go to give evidence if nothing can be achieved with your evidence. If you don't have sufficient evidence or there aren't sufficient witnesses, and all that's going to happen is you're telling tales and the Beis Din can't act on your evidence, you may not go. So you can only take evidence to the Beis Din if you have sufficient evidence for the Beis Din to act on. But if the Beis Din can't act, then there's no point in going to give evidence. And Rabbeinu Yonah in Sha'arei Tshuva in the Chelek Shlishi Siman Reishu Tes goes into the whole question of when one does tell and when one doesn't tell and so on. And what about confronting an individual with something he's done wrong, when you do it and when you don't do it, telling his friends about it and so on. among other things, he says as follows: Ve'im achote ish asher einenu yorei milifnei ha'odukim. If a man is a sinner and shows no signs of yiras shamayim, he just does whatever he wants to. He doesn't seem to care at all. He throws off the yoke of heaven. He shows no concern for the mitzvahs. And for example, one avera, it doesn't have to be everything, just one avera he ignores. Everybody knows it's something which is well known, but it's the wrong thing to do, and he just discards it altogether. He does it blatantly, openly, and he couldn't care. Muter la chalimui ulesaper bignusa. The halacha is, says Rabbeinu Yonah, that one may embarrass him with it and tell others about it. If he shows absolute disdain for it and openly and flagrantly ignores the halacha in a particular area, and it seems that it's out of Yiras Shamayim, it's not because he just has the Yetzer Hara that he can't control, it's just a total lack of caring of anything, one can try and one can embarrass him. Kach Omru Rabbi Seinu, so Chazal have said, V'loy tuinu ishes hamisa, you shouldn't oppress your friend. Im she ischo batoiru v'mitzvus al tanei bidvari. That means that you shouldn't oppress a man who shares your value system. That's what amisu, that's what your friend means. A friend is a person who shares the same value system, who keeps Torah and mitzvahs. V'ashel lo yishas libo el dvar Hashem, but a person who ignores the word of Hashem totally, is not interested in it. Muter la chalimui b'ma'alolov, you can cause him embarrassment from his deeds. Ulohudia toy avoysov, v'lishbuch buzolov, and to make it known that he's a bad person and to embarrass him. And further Chazal said, you must do it because of the problem of Chilul Hashem. What is the problem of Chilul Hashem? There are a few problems. The one is that people don't realize. People think he's a tzaddik and he does things which are terribly wrong, and people think it's okay. So you have to tell people, no, it's not okay. What that man does is not in order. That's the one form of Chilul Hashem. The other one that the Gemara says is that eventually Hashem will punish him, and people will ask, why is he being punished? He doesn't seem to have done anything wrong. So people need to know, no, he did do wrong. So if a person is flagrantly ignoring Yiras Shamayim and shows no care and concern for it, one is permitted to expose it. Aval im nichshal b'chet al derech mikre, but if it's just that he does, he normally keeps the Torah, it just happened, it was nichshal, he did something wrong. But mostly he's a serious person who tries to keep away from Averus generally. Then one mustn't talk about it. A person who's had a weakness, who's fallen, you don't talk about that, you don't embarrass him, he's generally a good person. But you've got to be careful with something else, and that is that you yourself are not a sinner. Even if there is somebody who you should expose, you're afraid he's a dishonest person, he pretends to be a serious person, but it's clear that he ignores the halacha and he doesn't care about it at all, and it's one of these cases which one should expose. But if you yourself are a person who has weaknesses, you must be careful not to expose it. Ki ein kavanosoi begalusoi mistorov letoiva, ki im lismach leid. Because you can be sure that a person who himself is not a tzaddik, when he reveals the chatoim of another person, is doing it not l'shem shemayim, but because he enjoys it too. It's an opportunity to pull somebody else down, and he gets a little bit of nachas from it. And that puzzles him, that disqualifies him from the act. So even in a case where you're obligated to expose somebody else, that is provided you're doing it 100% l'shem shemayim. But if there's any sense that you might be getting your own, some pleasure out of it, some personal pleasure out of it, one isn't permitted to do so. Because that's an act of aggression, that's not an act of any kind of mitzvah, of any kind of l'shem shemayim. There's certain mitzvahs that it doesn't matter if you do, it's not l'shem shemayim, it's still good. If you're keeping Shabbos and it's not l'shem shemayim, you're keeping Shabbos because you just enjoy the break. No, it's still a good thing, not so serious, you should still do it. A person learns Torah, not l'shem shemayim, not because he loves Torah, he learns Torah because he gets honor from it, or because he wants to become a rabbi. Not so serious, mitzvah shelo lishmo, bo lishmo, you'll do it for the wrong reasons, it's also good. But there are some good things which if one does for the wrong reasons, one isn't permitted to do them at all. And that's a thing which has potential harm to others. If your action could potentially harm others, you may do it only provided you're pure. Provided there's absolutely no ulterior motive in what you're doing. If there's any ulterior motive in what you're doing, you can't harm somebody else. That's the Rabbeinu Yonah's fazit concerns us. what about wiping out Amalek? There too, there has to be a concern, says Rabbi Avraham Grudzinski, that one's doing it l'shem shemayim. If there is any pleasure in the wiping out of Amalek, any personal gratification, one isn't permitted to do it. Just as the Rabbi Avraham Grudzinski takes this principle of Rabbeinu Yonah very far, and he says a judge, for example, who has to impose a sentence on a person, the caliber of the judge has to be such that he loves people to such a degree that it hurts him to have to impose a sentence on a person, then he's permitted to be a judge. But if he has any cruelty within his nature, he isn't. One of the halachas is a judge should have children of his own. Because a person who doesn't have children of his own hasn't developed fully the feelings of mercy which children arouse in parents. And that can also create a harshness in his judgment which isn't allowed to be there. There's got to be a feeling of love for people. When there's a feeling of love for people, then one can afford to be harsh. You can't be harsh when you don't have that feeling of love. Vilna Gaon says that you can't punish a child when you're angry. That's too late. You can only punish a child when you're calm and collected about it. You've got to be able to love the child as you're punishing him. To punish the child because you're angry, that's an act of regression. That's not an act of education. And so it is with all those mitzvahs that we have to do, which involve damage to other people, even though the damage is in itself a mitzvah. We have to be careful and concerned that mitzvah is being performed 100% l'shem shemayim. And Rabbi Avraham Grudzinski learns that's the self-analysis that Shaul is going through. Shaul is not questioning whether the mitzvah needs to be done or the mitzvah doesn't need to be done. That's not his question. Of course the mitzvah needs to be done. Hashem gave him the instruction. And moreover, he's not criticized for the questioning. And if he was questioning, is this mitzvah justified? Should these people be killed? There's no question that would be criticized, but he's not criticized for that. So what is the self-analysis? What have these people done, and do they deserve it or don't they deserve it? The question is, do I feel sufficiently neutral about it? Do I love people generally sufficiently to qualify myself to be the person to wipe them out? And if I don't feel, if I go into it with a great deal of pleasure and enthusiasm and aggression, then I'm disqualified, then I'm no good. I've got to go into it with a feeling of pity. And if I can't feel that feeling of pity, if I can't feel a little bit, what have they done? Then I'm disqualified from the action. That's something we have to be careful about generally, that we find sometimes that the aggressive things that we're allowed to do, we do with a great deal more enthusiasm than the constructive things we have to do. Look at the enthusiasm and the joy with which people stamp their feet and shake their noisy things when we say homon. Everybody takes such delight in it, and the children take such delight in it. To express anger and aggression is something we find it easy to get enthusiastic about. And people, when there's a question of indignation, how people find it easy, people demonstrate. When wrong is done, when there's an injustice, people are able to demonstrate, and they get angry, and they write letters into the paper, and they stand for hours outside with placards, and they march up and down the streets. Indignation is something we find easy to get excited about. And the reason we get excited about it is not because of the rights and the wrongs of the issue. If that was the reason that we were getting excited, we would get as excited about good things. We would demonstrate about good things. When the government did something right, we would demonstrate. Our demonstration, congratulations for what you've done, how wonderful, we're so excited, we would sing and dance in the streets. But we don't. When something good and right is done, we don't even notice it. When something's wrong and it's done, then we get all very excited. That means we're not being moved by the action. We're not being moved by what's being done, it's right or it's wrong. It's just an opportunity to vent our own aggression, that's all. It's an opportunity to get rid of our own frustrations, and that's the way we do it, so that we come out looking like tzaddikim. And that's the danger with a mitzvah like wiping out the memory of Amalek. That we can be venting our own aggressions rather than being mekayim a mitzvah. And the test is there that feeling of pity? So Shaul's going through his self-analysis is, am I qualified to do the mitzvah? Let me see what I feel. What do I feel? I feel, what do these people do to deserve it? The answer is they've done nothing to deserve it. It doesn't matter. The mitzvah is they need to be wiped out, and we'll understand in a moment why they need to be wiped out. But Shaul is satisfied now that his feelings are correct. But he's warned by the Baskul, Al Tehi Tzadik Harbe, don't go too far in that analysis. Because if you allow your feelings of mercy to go too far, you might in fact not fulfill the mitzvah to its completion, which is what happened. But you've got to feel the mercy, and then you've got to do the mitzvah. and you've got to wipe them out, but you've got to wipe them out to the end. And if you stop before the end, then the feeling of mercy has interfered with the feeling of justice, and the mitzvah has not been fulfilled to its completion. But that means that one has to be on a very high level to be able to fulfill this mitzvah. Even a man like Shaul, about whom Chazal tell us that when he was appointed to the throne, he had never sinned, he had never done an avera. Like, he was like a child, he was totally innocent. Even a tzaddik of that stature has to go through this whole process of self-analysis to make sure that his killing of Amalek, his wiping out of Amalek, is for the mitzvah only, and that there is no sense of self-gratification, that there is no expression of violence or of aggression, venting his own feelings in it, that he's doing it only l'shem shemayim. He even has to go through that process, and he trips up, because it's a very difficult mitzvah to get right. If one's all aggressive, then you can't do the mitzvah. And if you're all placid and timid and full of mercy, you're also unlikely to be able to do the mitzvah. So you need both. You have to have both qualities simultaneously. You have to feel the mercy. You have to feel the love of humanity. Be sure that in the wiping out of Amalek, you're not achieving any sense of gratification at all. On the contrary, you find the essence of it distasteful, except that it's a mitzvah of Hashem, and that's why you're doing it. And yet you need to be able to wipe them out mercilessly. So it's an amazing complexity of feelings that one has to have in order to fulfill this mitzvah of the destruction of the people of Amalek. And yet this mitzvah is given to every Jew. This is not only for the tzaddikim, this is not only for the king. At the time that that Eretz Yisrael is established, and the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, and that we have a king and a Mashiach, the mitzvah is for every Jew to do. That means we're all able to function on the level where it's possible to do. And on the basis of this Rabbeinu Yonah, that could be difficult. Because says Rabbeinu Yonah, if we ourselves are sinners in any way, it's very difficult to be sure that you're taking it out on the other one isn't a form of self-vindication. That you're not really getting some kind of subtle pleasure from that fact. You have to be pure yourself. So who of us can feel pure enough to be able to take on the mitzvah of the wiping out of Amalek and be satisfied that there's no self-gratification in it, there's no self-aggrandizement in it at all, no deep subconscious sense of satisfaction that I'm okay, I'm a tzaddik, I'm wiping them out because they're evil. What is it that we're wiping Amalek out for? What did this nation do that was so bad? There are other nations that have been bad, that we've had trouble from all sorts of nations. Why is Amalek picked on as the only nation of whom the memory has to be wiped out? Not only that the people have to be killed, but the memory has to be wiped out. There must be no memory of Amalek. The Pasuk tells us in the Torah that we read this morning, Asher korcho baderech, he chanced upon you on the way, vayezanev becho es kol hanechasholim acharecho, and he tailed after all the weak ones among you, va'ato oyev beyoge, and you were tired and worn out, velo yore elukim, and not God fearing. Says Rashi, "V'lo yore Amalek Elokim milahar alecha." Amalek was not God fearing. Not that you weren't God fearing. You were tired and worn out, and Amalek was not God fearing. Where do we see the expression of his lack of God fearingness? So Rashi brings the famous medrash on the word Asher Korcho Baderech. Korcho Baderech can come from the word Mikre, by chance. He chanced upon you on the way, and it can come from the word Kar, which means cold. Says Rashi, Shayu kol ha'umois yereim lihilochem bochem. All the nations were afraid to fight with Israel. Look what had just happened. They had conquered Egypt. They had gone through the 10 plagues. The Red Sea had split. The Torah had been given. And all the nations knew about this. These incredible miracles. The Mon was coming. These people were marching through the desert. Thousands, hundreds and thousands of them, millions of them, marching through the desert. Food was being provided. Water was being provided. Places where nobody had survived before. Nature was crumbling before them. So everybody was afraid to take them on. And this one came and started, and showed the way to others. This can be compared to a boiling bath. Nobody can get into the bath. People try, put their toes into the bath, and they jump out. It's too hot. Bo ben Belial echod, one grub person, one real nobody comes along. Kofatz v'yorad l'toichu, he jumps right into it. Afal pi shenichve, even though he's burnt, he jumps in. Hikro oiso bifnei acherim, he makes it cooler for others. What does it mean, he makes it cooler for others? It's not just that he physically cools the temperature of the water. That's not what's important. Once he's shown it's possible, one can survive it, other people are motivated to do it as well. And that's the concept really of pritzas geder, what we call breaking down the fence. Sometimes one does something which is wrong on two levels. Number one, the action is wrong. But more important than that, if it's something which the community never did before, it's opening a whole new area of wrongdoing for everybody else. For example, there were communities, a lot of the Sephardi communities in North Africa and Yemen, where until they came to Israel, they had never seen anybody be mechalel Shabbos. They had never seen anybody desecrate the Shabbos, ever. It just wasn't done. And if anybody would do it, they would be ostracized, they would be stoned, there wasn't a question about it. Nobody was mechalel Shabbos. When you've got a community that's not mechalel Shabbos, the first person who does it is doing two things wrong. Number one, he's being mechalel Shabbos, which is serious enough. But number two, he's breaking down the fence. He's making it acceptable for others to do too. And that's something very serious. One has to respect the boundaries set up by a society. And whether one agrees with it or one doesn't agree with it, one has to respect it and realize the dangers of pritzas geder. Once you've broken down a fence, you've opened the way to others to act in a negative way too. And that fence, that protection, is no longer there. Sometimes you have a class of children, and the class is well behaved. One child starts messing around with the teacher, and everybody follows. It's opened the way, it can be done. The first person who opens up a negative path breaks down barriers which destroy the moral fabric of that entire society, and he becomes responsible for that destruction. And sometimes the action itself is not so terrible, but it's still a pritzas geder. For example, when the Jews came from Eastern Europe and they all used to dress in a certain way, and the first people who started dressing like the non-Jews dressed was not so terrible, not such a serious thing, good. Dressing like the non-Jews, not all that right. But it's worse than that. He was breaking down barriers between the Jewish and the non-Jewish community. And that leads along the line, ultimately, to intermarriage. The first person, if they wouldn't have broken down those fences, all the other fences down the line wouldn't have been broken either. So one sometimes has to respect the fence. Amalek comes along and he takes on the Jewish people. And thereby he shows that they're only human. And that they can be battled with. That's cooling down the value of the Jewish people. And there are two aspects to it. The one is, after all, it's cooling down their attitude to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And there's another attitude too, that pulling somebody down or something down and showing that it or he is only human can also destroy the fabric of society. People often ask whether earlier leaders, if they were exposed to media scrutiny of the caliber that people are exposed to today, whether they would have survived. Would a Churchill have been able to do what he did if he was exposed to the media scrutiny that today's leaders are exposed to? Would a Napoleon be able to do what he did? Would any of those leaders been able to do, a Roosevelt, been able to do what he did if the media would treat them the way they did? Roosevelt was lame. Roosevelt never got out of his wheelchair. And the media had an understanding with the White House that they would never photograph him in a way that displayed his lameness. So he was always photographed behind desks and behind podiums and so on, that you couldn't see he was sitting in a wheelchair. You couldn't see there was anything wrong with him. Some people knew, some people didn't know. But whether you knew or you didn't, the fact is that with pictures constantly being shown, not of a lame person, but of a person that looks fine, you relate to him fine. If the media had constantly shown pictures of a person who was lame and indisposed, one's impression would always be of an inadequate president, of a president who has a problem, and that would destroy his status, that would destroy his stature. So the pulling it down of a person and showing, after all, he's just a human being like the rest of us, that has its own dangers too. And sometimes one has to try and preserve the fences, one has to try and preserve the specialness because of the effect it has on the community. And so Amalek was the one who broke that down. There was a tremendous aura about the Jewish people as they came out of Mitzrayim. This is something unusual, this is something special, this is the nation of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And people kept away. Amalek broke that down. Amalek showed that they were ordinary people, and you can fight with them, and you can conquer them, and you can take them on too. And that was the expression of the Lo Yorei Elokim. What about the other nations? They didn't do that. They didn't take on Am Yisrael at the beginning. Why not? Because they were scared. But who were they scared of after all? What were they scared of? The supernatural. These are the people who split the sea. These are the people who were taken out of Egypt. They've got some kind of relationship with their God. I'm scared to come near them. That's Yerushalayim. That's fear of God on its lowest level, but it's still fear of God. So the other nations had some degree of Yiras Hashem, some degree of fear of Hashem. Shomu Amim Yirgozun, we say in the Shira, in the song that the Bnei Israel sang after crossing the Red Sea. Nations heard and trembled. That's fine. The nation trembles, there's Yerushalayim. That's it. And the Bavron Grudzinski claims that Yerushalayim is the basic or the minimum requirement for the right to existence. If one acknowledges that there's a God, and you're scared of that acknowledgement at least, there's some kind of fear of it. You understand? I'm a created being. I'm not a creator. I am created. There is a creator. And there's some kind of fear, there's some kind of awe, some esteem in which I have to hold that creator. Then the minimum requirements for existence are there. But if a creature doesn't recognize that he's a creature, if a creature doesn't recognize that he was created, he has no right to existence at all. If an employee doesn't recognize that there is an employer, doesn't recognize that there's a boss, he has no right to be an employee. If a student doesn't realize that there's a teacher, he has no right to be a student. And so it's gone. If a dog doesn't realize that he's got a master, he has no right to be a dog. Each stage of evolution, each stage of being, requires an acknowledgement of the subservience of that being to that which is above him. And if there is no acknowledgement of subservience to that which is above you, if there's no acknowledgement at all, you have no right to existence. The human being has the ability to deny the existence of anything above him. That's the reason that we wear a yarmulke. That's the reason that we wear, one of the reasons that we cover our heads. Simply to remember that there's something on top of us. That we're not the top of the world. There's something, the head is the highest part of the human being, and that's what we're so proud of, our mental ability, to remember that on top of our heads there's still something. That's Yerushalayim. Cover your head, the Gemara says. Cover your head so that you will have Yerushalayim. That's what Yerushalayim is, just to remember there's something on top of you. That's the fundamental. That's the beginning of Yerushalayim. The moment a person forgets that there's someone on top of him, the Yerushalayim is gone. Every nation had Yerushalayim. They're scared to touch the Jewish people. Why? There's a Ribbono Shel Olam. That's why. Comes Amalek and says, I'm not scared. Not scared of who? Not scared of the Jews? Nobody was scared of the Jews. A nation of slaves. Why should anybody be scared of the Jews? They were scared of Hashem. So what does Amalek say to that? I'm not scared of Hashem. Not scared of Hashem, you have no rights to existence. And that's the essence of Amalek. Amalek is a nation that does not fear the Ribbono Shel Olam, that does not acknowledge the existence of a creator, that does not acknowledge the moral subservience of humanity to a power, to a being above them. And that we can't accept. Idolatry, there's idolatry, good. We've got to counter it. We've got to fight it. We've got to destroy it. But that doesn't deny the right to existence. There's some kind of understanding of a superpower. Amalek isn't even an idolater. He's a total agnostic. Amalek is the only nation that is a nation of agnostics. A nation that fundamentally does not believe in the power of anything above them. And such a nation has no right to exist. There is no right of existence. It cannot add anything to the world. It cannot contribute anything into the world. And it has to be annihilated. Because what are you annihilating? You're annihilating the absence of Yerushalayim. That's what one's doing. And that really is the mitzvah of remembering Amalek. Lo tishkoch, don't forget what they did to you. Remembering what Amalek did to you is merely another way of remembering, of being conscious of Yerushalayim. By realizing why I've got to destroy Amalek, why Amalek has no right to existence, that reinforces my understanding that Yerushalayim, that fear of God, is the fundamental of existence. A human being has to have that. Every human being has to have that. Jew, Gentile, every human being has to have an awareness of a being above him to whom he's subservient. Now, if that's the Aveiro, that is the transgression for which I have to destroy Amalek, then it doesn't matter if I'm a person who has performed other Averas. That does not disqualify me from performing this one mitzvah. Because, explains Rabbi Avraham Grudzinski, in every Jew there's Yerushalayim. Not only in every Jew is there Yerushalayim, but in every Goy there's Yerushalayim. There is an awareness of God in every human being, unless he's from the nation of Amalek. It's deep, it's submerged, it's distorted, but deep down in every human being there is an awareness of a superpower. There is an awareness of a super being, there's an awareness of a deity, there's an awareness of a God, there's an awareness of the fact that I didn't create myself, that I am subservient to some force, except in the people of Amalek. And as long as there exists such an awareness, I am qualified to be able to wipe Amalek out. Because I'm doing it not out of any kind of self-gratification, I'm doing it because of an awareness within myself that a lack of Yerushalayim has to be destroyed. If there is a nation that has no Yerushalayim, that has to be wiped out and destroyed totally. In the case of Purim, we find that what we stress most in Purim is the salvation of the Jewish people. That's what we celebrate, the fact that we were saved. We were threatened and we saved, and we were saved. But there is another element to Purim which needs to be stressed too. The Gemara says in Megillah Daf Lamed, Purim shechal liyus be'erev Shabbos. If Purim falls on a Friday, when do we read Parshas Zochar? Rav Omer Magdimim Parshas Zochar Ushmuel Omer Ma'achrim. Rav says you put Parshas Zochar on the previous Shabbos, and Shmuel says you read it that Shabbos. Rav Omer Magdimim, why does Rav say you bring Parshas Zochar a week early? So that the performance of the mitzvah will not come before the remembrance of the mitzvah. What is the remembrance of the mitzvah? Reading the parsha. Remember what Amalek did to you, wipe Amalek out. Reading the parsha which we read this morning, the parsha of Amalek, is the mitzvah of remembering Amalek. And what's the asiyo? Asiyo means doing the mitzvah. Doing what mitzvah? Wiping Amalek out. When do we? We don't perform that mitzvah. But we see from the Gemara we do perform that mitzvah. We perform that mitzvah on Purim. And we must have Parshas Amalek before Purim, because Parshas Amalek is the Zechira, is the remembering, and Purim is the action. What action? Putting into practice the mitzvah that we remember on the Shabbos. The wiping out of Amalek. How do we do that? And here you see some of the difficulties and subtleties and challenges of the mitzvah of Purim. If Purim is just to celebrate our own survival, that's easy to get excited about and to be happy about. But that's not what it is we see. The mitzvah of Purim is an active participation in the mitzvah of wiping Amalek out. So although we're not physically wiping Amalek out, by celebrating the destruction of Amalek, we are participating in that action. Because to get excited about something that we're not directly involved in is participation. That's what we discussed last Motzei Shabbos. If I can be as happy at your simcha as I am at my own, I'm participating in your simcha. It's as if it's my own. To find joy in something that somebody else did means one is participating in that action. And if I can celebrate the fact that the Jews of Shushan were being mekayim the mitzvah of wiping out Amalek, and I can rejoice in that mitzvah, I have participated. That's called asiyo. I too am performing that mitzvah. I too am doing that mitzvah. But the difficulty is that there's a difficulty in performing the mitzvah, so there's a difficulty in celebrating the mitzvah. I've got to be sure that in my celebration, I'm celebrating the destruction of the void, of the absence of Yerushalayim. I'm not celebrating the destruction of an evil enemy. I'm not celebrating the destruction of somebody who wanted to destroy me. Amalek was never a big threat to us. That's not what we're getting upset about. He didn't really cause us all that much damage, except in the case of Shushan where he nearly did. But in fact he didn't. If we go through our enemies, in actual damage, Amalek has performed some of the least. We haven't suffered that much. We've nearly suffered, but we haven't really suffered from Amalek that much. We're not destroying him because of what he did to us. We're destroying him because of what he is. And in Purim, what we're getting excited about is that there is a relatively contained nation of agnostics, of people who don't recognize that there is a God at all, that there is a super deity at all, and that's what the Jews of Shushan were battling against and trying to wipe out. And that's what we're celebrating, that they were mekayim the mitzvah of Bechiyas Amalek, they were mekayim the mitzvah of wiping out Amalek. And in that joy there has to be purity. In that joy there has to be a feeling that we're not just rejoicing a physical victory, we're rejoicing the success of the Jews in challenging one of the few times in history, actually challenging Amalek. In fact, only twice in history. Once was by Shaul, and the other time was by the Jews of Shushan. And we identify with that, and we participate with that in that understanding. And the idea that is that out of that there emerges greater Yerushalayim. The idea of a Purim is not that you land up with a hangover the next morning. The idea of Purim is that you land up the next morning with greater Yerushalayim, with an understanding that lack of Yerushalayim has to be battled against. That lack of Yerushalayim has to be battled against not only in our Mulek, but it has to be battled against among ourselves as well. And it has to be battled within ourselves as well. That there's a little bit of our Mulek in each one of us. There's a little bit in each one of us that likes to pretend occasionally that God's not looking. And at those moments when we like to pretend that God's not looking, those are our Mulek times. That's times when there's a little bit of our Mulek. There's no Yerushalayim at that time. That's what we're battling in Purim. That's what we're celebrating in Purim. The victory of Yerushalayim over the lack of Yerushalayim. The fact that the Jewish people are able to take Amalek on and are able to wipe him out and be victorious, which is something which gives us the enthusiasm and the motivation and the encouragement to know that despite the fact that there are times where we like to feel or we tend to feel that Hashem is withdrawn and that he isn't looking and that he doesn't exist and that we are not subservient to him, we have the ability within ourselves to take that on. We have the ability within ourselves to enforce our Yerushalayim upon ourselves, to wipe out that void that occasionally hits us of pretending or of forgetting that there is a God who's watching and that there is a God who's caring and there is a God who's concerned, and to know that it is possible to be Moicher Zecher Amalek, to wipe that out totally, resulting not only in the world as a whole and in the Jewish people as a whole living up to the principles of Yerushalayim, but to each individual one of us having wiped out the Amalek within us, being able to operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with constant Yerushalayim, constant awareness that we are in the presence of Hashem, and it is to Him that we are subservient.